enforcement functions in New York City just as the United Nations General Assembly gets underway. ABC's Aaron Katursky has more.
There are no arrests yet. The apartment where the equipment was found were empty. Investigators suspect the alleged plot is the work of a well-organized and well-funded group that law enforcement sources say is believed to be linked to China.
President Trump will address the UN General Assembly today. He, Monday at the White House, said that pregnant women should not take Tylenol during pregnancy because of the potential for an increased risk of autism. But a number of medical groups have said that decades of studies have not found a causal link between acetaminophen, the active ingredient in Tylenol, and autism. The Jimmy Kimmel Show returns tonight after a suspension from Disney, the parent company of ABC News, over comments Kimmel made about the assassination of Charlie Kirk. This is ABC News.
For WRCE 107.7 and AM 1450 News, I'm Tim Thied. On Friday evening at approximately 10:28, the Grant County Sheriff's Office responded to a report of a large underage party at an address on Snowbottom Road in Wingville Township. Upon arrival, deputies observed several individuals inside the residence consuming alcoholic beverages. When it was noticed the deputies were there, several subjects fled into the woods. The investigation determined that approximately 30 underage individuals were at the party. As a result, all minors with a detectable amount of alcohol in their system were issued citations. The property owner was notified and thanked law enforcement for their assistance. The Grant County Sheriff's Office also reports on Saturday morning at approximately 6:42, they received a report of a motorcycle crash that occurred on County Highway U near the intersection with South Boyce Creek Road in Potosi Township. Upon receipt of the report, Potosi Fire and EMS were dispatched to the scene, along with deputies from the Grant County Sheriff's Office. When the deputies arrived on the scene, it was determined Ronald Walsh, 64 of Horicon, was traveling west on County Highway U on his 2004 Harley-Davidson. The weather conditions at the time were rainy with fog. For unknown reasons, Walsh's motorcycle drove off the north side of the roadway, causing the motorcycle to crash into the ditch and become airborne. Walsh was ejected from the motorcycle. Walsh was not wearing a helmet and, due to injuries sustained in the crash, was pronounced dead at the scene by the Grant County coroner.
A new pitcher for the crew. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports Baseball. A new starting pitcher tonight for Milwaukee when the Brewers face the Padres in San Diego. He's 30-year-old left-hander Bruce Zimmerman, called up over the weekend to take the place of Brandon Woodruff, now on IL with a strained lat. The Brewers losing last night to the Padres 5-4 in 11 innings. San Diego clinched their spot in the postseason for a fourth time in the last 6 years. NFL. The Packers had a field goal block Sunday that could have been a game winner against the Browns. Packers head coach Matt LaFleur.
The unfortunate thing about special teams in general is when there is a mistake, there are catastrophic mistakes. I would say most of the emphasis typically when you're just talking across the league is placed on punt. Bottom line with us, I think it comes down to just being disciplined and trusting your technique.
That's Matt LaFleur with Sports on Mike Clemens.
You're listening to 107.7 WRCE, home for the Todd Allball Show, weekday afternoons from 2 to 4.
Hi, meteorologist Brandon Bormans. Areas of fog through mid to late morning, then expect skies to gradually become mostly sunny, a high temperature near 74. Tonight, partly cloudy skies with lows in the mid-50s. Good-looking day on Wednesday, partly sunny with highs in the lower 70s. It's 58 at our studios.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org.
brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Matt and Air on Air.
Dr. Kristen Lyerly is here.
I also don't want to, you know, sit and doom scroll before I go to sleep at night, yeah, because that's not good for my brain. It doesn't help my sleep patterns. Right. And
my brother-in-law, you went to medical school with him. He said at 2 hours, turn off all screens. At 1 hour, get yourself ready for bed. And he goes, and Greg, bed is for two things. That's it.
What are they?
Moving on.
Sleeping in
chess. Listen to you laugh.
Matt and Air on Air. Weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody. Jimmy Kimmel's back on the air. We'll explain what it means for free speech here in Wisconsin. And Badger football head coach Luke Fickell under fire. We'll discuss your chance to win green and gold tickets in Green Bay. Continue.
The Todd Albaugh Show. Weekdays 2 to 4. You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
The Elder Care Locator is here to help you live your best life as you age at home. Our call center advisors are ready to connect you with trustworthy local experts. Help is just a phone call away at 1-800-677-1116.
Across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Good morning. It is 8:06. It is nice to have you back here up north on this Tuesday morning, September 23rd, 2025. We have our Political Tuesday tag team coming up. Cam Stevenson from the nation's capital and Courier Newsroom and the Below the Beltway newsletter, talking about what's happening with the potential for a government shutdown and much more. So Cam Stevenson on the way, followed by Dan Schaefer at 8:35, Civic Media's political editor, founder of the Recombobulation Area, talking all about Wisconsin political news. But before we get to all of that, we welcome back meteorologist Brittany Merlot, along with Parker Olson, who's producing things down in Madison Studio A2. From Rob in Tigerton, it's sunny and 53 in Tigerton. It's sunny in Tigerton?
It's sunny in Wausau. I don't see a cloud, not any fog. Isn't that crazy?
I don't know if it's sunny here.
Locked in with clouds. You don't have a window, Parker. You couldn't tell. It could be raining frogs right now.
So hard. I can see windows, but I can't really see much.
Rob says he'll be back mowing grass after being off for 3 days because of the rain. Yeah, that sounds about right. Let's see. What else did he have to say? Oh, he wanted to wish a happy birthday to his brother-in-law, Dave. His birthday was yesterday. He watched the Lions defeat the Ravens last night. I'm not going to put that kind of... I'll invest in Packer games, but I'm not going to be doing Monday Night Football with the Lions.
Seriously?
So, yes.
They're good now.
I know they're good now. That I'm not going to necessarily...
Not like watching the Browns play against the Packers.
Well, yeah, please. Alicia says it's cloudy in Green Bay. So now that we've given you just the most higgledy-piggledy sky condition forecast possible, Brittany, where does it all go from here?
Well, it's all going to lift and clear, and we are going to see, unfortunately, more clouds south. So Madison, Milwaukee area, and down that way, you're going to stick with more clouds because that front is parked right over Racine, dipping down into northern Illinois. But the good thing is that it dips. So that means all of the rain is going to be staying south of the state. So we're only looking at chances of maybe a spotty sprinkle or two midday. And it looks like that stays up north mostly. Then tomorrow, those spotty sprinkles wrap over Lake Michigan and stay southeast by Milwaukee, Green Bay, and into the Fox Valley. And then the whole system clears on out of here and a high pressure moves in, giving us nothing but abundant sunshine for the rest of the week, into the weekend, and even into early next week. It is going to be gorgeous. So we've just got to be patient with this fog in the mornings. This is going to happen again tonight and maybe tomorrow night in places. After that, the winds start to pick up and the fog should not be a problem. But we are looking at high temperatures today in the mid-60s north to mid-70s south. It will be mixed skies, more sunshine north, more clouds south. And then tomorrow, a little bit cooler, 60s statewide.
All right. Well, I heard on local Eau Claire media this morning, they were almost apologetic, like it's the first day of fall. And they're like, well, but it's not going to be fall, like it's going to be really warm today. I'm like, why are you apologizing for warm weather? Oh, I'm sorry, it's not snowing yet. They may as well have said, I'm like, no, it can be the first day of fall. It does not. We don't need highs in the 40s yet. Okay.
No, not yet. No. We just want the fall colors and some sunshine. That's what we want for fall.
And that's
right?
the thing. We mentioned sure. that yesterday. It's kind of a nerve-wracking time that you don't want anything to happen storm-wise that, you know, blows the leaves off before we get all the nice change of colors.
It's so true. So I'm glad we have this dry stretch ahead, mm-hmm. let those colors pop and big systems stay away.
Pop the colors, get the crops off the field. Exactly, Brittany. Yep. Thank you very much. Have a great day. Hey, let's talk newsletters for a sec here because it's the thing. Right now is you get to your email box and you subscribe to the ones that you like. It's like a morning paper or an evening newspaper, but you get the sections that you want to read and you don't have to get ink on your hands and throw the rest away. So that's why we talk about our daily newsletter and our weekly newsletter on Sunday mornings. You head over to upnorthnewswi.com. You click subscribe in the banner on top of the homepage and sign up for one or both of those. Civic Media has a new daily newsletter filled with links to show highlights and more. Go check that out. CivicMediaToday.substack.com. Yes, I'll say it again. CivicMediaToday.substack.com is out there. And of course, Up North News is part of Courier Newsroom, lots of state outlets, podcasts, newsletters. And if you want dispatches from Washington, D.C., well, Cam Stevenson puts one together from Capitol Hill. It's called Below the Beltway, and you can get details at beltway.news or couriernewsroom.com, or just listen for the next 8 minutes or so as we talk to Cam Stevenson from the nation's capital. Cam, good morning. How are you?
Hey, morning, Pat. I'm doing all right. How are you?
Good. I mean, I always feel like we have to start with, you know, you taking your family and uprooting them, moving them from Arizona to the nation's capital. I feel like we get this almost like this reality series of, you know, Cam moves the family, Cam to the capital. The family is there. How goes the adjustment? I know you were like in temporary quarters for a while. Are you in your new digs?
Not yet. It's a slow process in the housing market right now. So between find someone to buy our place in sure. Phoenix so we can find a place out here. It's a process, but it gives us a chance to explore, figure out the neighborhoods and see what part of the city we like.
There you go. And we can play a role in that. If anybody is interested in buying Cam's house in Phoenix, just reach out to us through the radio station and we'll get you connected. I mean,
we
don't just do politics. We can do a little HGTV stuff here while we're at it. Okay. But you do have your day job of working as national yeah. correspondent for Courier Newsroom and looking at the recent edition of Below the Beltway. A few different topics in there. We've talked about the potential of a government shutdown at length already today. So let me set that one aside for a moment. In the wake of the Charlie Kirk killing, there has been what I'm calling a backlash to the backlash, where people said, look, we get that you are angry and upset that not everybody's a Charlie Kirk fan and that some people are actually speaking out about what Charlie Kirk stood for and said. But the backlash to that is coming awfully close to infringing or trampling upon people's First Amendment rights to freedom of expression. And you point out in Below the Beltway that, you know, attempts to limit free speech didn't just happen recently and don't just happen to late night TV hosts. They happen in places like our classrooms.
Yeah. And actually, you know, our conversation last week is kind of what inspired me to look into this. Is when we were talking about Representative Van Orden and his just aggressive, blatant use of his platform as an elected representative to call for people to be fired, for calls for people to be silenced because they use their free speech. I wanted to look into, one, the legality of that, which is dubious, depending on which court you take it to, I guess, but really how we got to the point where that was socially acceptable. And what I found is a lot of these attacks on free speech and attacks on honest intellectual conversation started in the classroom with attacks on public schools. Now, in Wisconsin, what's the public-private school situation there? Are there vouchers?
We have a voucher program that is undergoing explosive growth right now. And I know we've talked to you about the Arizona aspect of that. It's just gobbling up such a growing part of the state budget. And yet without the kind of oversight and transparency that the public schools get.
Yes. Yeah. It's a way to funnel taxpayers to corporate school companies, mm-hmm. essentially. And the way that they do that is, one, by convincing state legislatures to let people use public tax dollars to pay, subsidize private school, which sounds like you're all very familiar with. But what we don't look into too much is how it got to the point where there are enough legislators and enough people on board for that to even become part of the system. And it really started a couple decades ago with just sowing distrust in public education, sowing distrust in teachers, calling into question their ability to teach, while simultaneously taking away their ability to offer a strict classroom. Where parents were simultaneously being hands off while expecting their teachers to do everything. This was actually a very well coordinated plot by members of the far right to erode public education. And this serves two purposes. One, like I mentioned, it allows these private for-profit corporations to set up schools, take public tax dollars, and then either shut down or close out certain populations that they don't want in their schools, usually divided by race and economics. And two, it allows them to essentially filter whatever they want their kids to learn. They teach false history, they teach incorrect civics, they give poor examples of what leadership looks like. And so by the time these kids go through high school, we have honestly the free speech problems that we have now, where people don't want to hear what they've been told is bad. People resort to violence, like what we saw with Kirk. And we see that public schools in Arizona anyway, and unfortunately, I imagine this will happen soon in Wisconsin, is that public schools are going to start to close because they won't have enough money and they won't have enough students.
Yep. We're talking to Cam Stevenson, national correspondent for Courier Newsroom, about, that topic and more. And I also wanted to take note of something you wrote in Below the Beltway about Trump, President Trump, again, sending American troops into a third American city without real justification. That, of course, would be, Memphis, coming after Washington, D.C. and Los Angeles. He continues to, threaten to do the same with Chicago. And so tell the folks a bit about what you wrote about the decision to send troops into Memphis.
Yeah, so I've been interested in this topic for a lot of reasons. One, I live in a city that's being occupied. And two, it's something that that Trump has wanted to do since his first term and is now finally actualizing that dream. But what we're seeing is that once the National Guard gets to these cities, they aren't doing anything. They're ridiculed online for that because they sit around or they're, picking up litter or what have you. But what I was wondering is why they keep sending troops if they can't do anything. And according to law, they're actually not allowed to do anything because military is forbidden from exercising domestic law enforcement. It's not their role. It's not what they're allowed to do. And it's not what they're doing, despite what the Trump administration is saying. They can't help with addressing crime, even if that was the goal. And so what I wanted to look into is, since they can't do that, why this expansion of troops? So I spoke with elected leaders in Memphis, in D.C., and in California. And what it seems to be is that they are essentially stationing troops similar to how military strategically stations troops prior to combat, where they see places where they're expecting there to be conflict. And so they're preparing their troops and preparing their forces preemptively so that when there is a conflict, they don't have to deploy and get them there, that they're already on site.
Conflict or midterm elections, as the case may be. And I'm sure we'll be talking more about that later as well. Cam Stevenson's newsletter, Below the Beltway, you can get it at beltway.news or couriernewsroom.com for all of Cam's dispatches from Capitol Hill. We still have in our next half hour, Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area talking to us about Wisconsin politics before we wrap things up on a Tuesday morning. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
News from the Center, WRCE.
It's the Eco Minute, powered by Clean Wisconsin, your environmental voice since 1970. I'm Amy Berrio. A new analysis from Clean Wisconsin shows AI data centers in the state will use more power than all the homes in Wisconsin combined. Potential energy demand has been disclosed for just two projects in the state, the Vantage Data Center in Port Washington and Phase 1 of the Microsoft Data Center in Mount Pleasant. Those two projects alone require a combined 3.9 gigawatts of power, which is enough energy to power more than 4 million Wisconsin homes. Wisconsin has just under 3 million housing units in the entire state. Senator Tammy Baldwin has announced Senate passage of a bill that will help protect Wisconsin lakes from toxic algae. The legislation would improve monitoring, forecasting, and prevention of harmful algal blooms by requiring better coordination among task force agencies, state and local entities, and tribes. Right now on the Defender podcast, the Wisconsin Climate March is coming. Listen to find out more at cleanwisconsin.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get ready to go for the green and gold on this local Civic Media radio station. Listen each weekday for the keywords to text for your chance to win our daily prize, $200 cash and gold jewelry. And be entered to win our grand prize, two indoor club level seats to see the green and gold take on Minnesota in Green Bay. Just download our free Civic Media app and listen weekdays at 7, 9, 11, 1, 3, 5, and 7 for your chance to win in our multi-state contest. For complete rules, go to civicmedia.us.
Doctors Without Borders is delivering life-saving medical care where it's needed most in communities around the world. From bandaging war-wounded patients in Sudan to providing clean drinking water in Haiti, we're in more than 70 countries worldwide, bringing patients from sick to recovering, from emergency to aid, from crisis to care. This life-saving care is made possible by a global movement of supporters like you. Thank you.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
I am Phil Nee with a look at sports in Southwest Wisconsin. Well, it's a busy schedule this evening. In soccer action, River Valley will be at Richland Center. That's JV action at 5 and varsity to follow at around 6:45. Platteville Lancaster plays at Dodgeville as well. There's a big cross-country meet at Westby today. Kickapoo LaFarge, North Crawford, Hillsboro, and Viroqua are all there. River Valley swim team is at Sauk Prairie. And a full night of volleyball tonight, including Richland Center at Lancaster, River Valley at Dodgeville, Platteville at Prairie du Chien. Fenimore plays at Riverdale, Iowa Grant at Boscobel. It's also Weston visiting Ithaca, Kickapoo at LaFarge, North Crawford at Seneca, and Wazika Steuben at DeSoto among the spiker action tonight. Last night in volleyball action, Weston topped Cooley Christian 3-0. The scores were 25-10, 25-14, and 25-18. Lexi Rockweiler led with 11 kills. Valerie Bauer finished with 16 assists. And Shelby Newman topped off the win with 9 kills, 5 aces, and 12 digs. The Eagles travel to Ithaca tonight to resume Ridge and Valley Conference play. And we'll be on hand for that one tonight. A good local matchup between Ithaca and Weston in volleyball. Ithaca is coached by Angie Young.
You know, last year was a really, really proud season for our girls. Just a really great season for the Ithaca volleyball program. It took a long time to get to that point. But I think they're also very realistic in looking at, you know, they have some new challenges this season and just really maintaining a positive outlook on that and continuing to work through it and embrace the season and just grow throughout this season.
Ithaca volleyball coach Angie Young. Her team is 5-1 in Ridge and Valley Conference play, entering the match with Weston tonight at home. Bowling scores from the Major League last night. Cardinal CG had a 3,500 series. Fraser Home Improvement, 33-81. And Vanity Fur Grooming, 33-47. Fraser Home Improvement had the top game, a 12-11. Cardinal CG, 11-73. Richland Family Restaurant, 11-62. Top series, Dan Schweinefuss, 7-41. 114 over average. Terry Wheaton had a 6-82. Chris Pardoon, a 6-57 series. Top game, a 2-99. For Dan Schweinefuss, 90 pins over average. Very close last night. Chris Pardoon with a 2.58. Terry Wheaton had a 2.43. Steve Nelson bowled a 6.14 series, 131 over average. And Bob Lewis bowled a 501 series, 114 over average in the Major Bowling League. Catcher Freddie Fermin singled in the winning run in the 11th inning last night, qualifying the Padres for the postseason. The Brewers dropped the hard-fought 5-4 game, with Grant Anderson taking the loss. Milwaukee took the lead with a 3-run second inning and held it until the 7th. Christian Yelich drove in 2 runs as the Brewers lost for the 3rd time in the last 4 games. Following the game, though, manager Pat Murphy was grateful that his team continued to play well.
Fantastic. I mean, it was great. We did so many great things, and I'm proud of our guys for not just showing up and saying, well, we've clinched a bye. We won the division, and showing up and playing as hard as they did. That touched me. I mean, I really thought it was special. I know guys are disappointed we didn't win. I am too.
Murph talked about some of the other things that were good with the game.
Freddie threw great. We had some good. Ashby was excellent. Koenig, very good. And Rob Z did the job. Some good offensive performances. Yelich, first time leading off, has 5 quality at-bats, gets on base 4 times. That's special.
Milwaukee will take on the Padres again this evening. Atlanta was a winner over Washington, 11-5, and St. Louis over San Francisco, 6-5, the final score. In the Monday night game, Jamar Gibbs and David Montgomery ran for 2 touchdowns each, and the Detroit Lions bullied their way to a 38-30 win over the Baltimore Ravens. The Lions sacked Lamar Jackson 7 times and outrushed the Ravens 224 yards to 85. Detroit scored on drives of 98 and 96 yards against a Baltimore front that was hurting with a couple of injuries. Up 31-24 at the 2-minute warning, Detroit actually converted on a 4th-and-2 from their own 49 when Jared Goff completed a 21-yard pass to Amon-Ra St. Brown. Then Montgomery raced for a 31-yard touchdown with 1:42 to play, capping a 151-yard night for the running back. In Packer news, the Packer offense centers around a consistent rushing attack, but that has been absent in the first 3 games. Head coach Matt LaFleur needs to find a way to get veteran running back Josh Jacobs going. Jacobs was held to 30 yards on 16 carries in Sunday's upset loss to the Browns. After a 1,300-yard season last year, he has produced just 180 yards on 58 carries. The Green Bay rushing attack is rated 20th in the league. Coach Matt LaFleur talked yesterday at his press conference about the mentality of the team moving forward.
We're just trying to win one game at a time. And if you're thinking or have your sights set on anything outside of that, I think you're focused on the wrong things. Like, we got to be focused on trying to get better. Obviously, today, the focus is on, first of all, being honest about the tape and what the tape says. And then, you know, learning from that. And then it's moving on.
Elsewhere in football news, San Francisco star defensive end Nick Bosa tore the ACL in his right knee and will miss the rest of the season. Also in sport news, the official kickoff time for the Wisconsin-Michigan game, October 4th, has been announced. The Badgers have a bye this week, then take on the Wolverines at a game starting at 11 a.m. Michigan is ranked 19th in this week's poll. It also has a bye this Saturday. Wisconsin will be trying to bounce back from a crippling 27-10 upset loss to Maryland. The Wolverines edged the Nebraska Cornhuskers by a score of 30-27. And if the Bucks plan to prove the critics wrong, they have to have primetime production from sixth man Bobby Portis this season. The veteran will have to cover some of the lost points from Damian Lillard's absence. Portis is known for his tip-ins and fadeaway shots. That offense was down last season. Bucks management is hoping the team hits more three-pointers this season. That's where a lot of Portis's tip-ins come in. And that is a wrap on sports this morning from WRCE, FM 107.7, and AM 1450 during Pat Kreitlow Mornings. Thank you for joining us. It looks like it's going to be a pretty nice day with temperatures around 74 later on. And enjoy some of this really nice weather and the nice fall colors that are just starting to turn here in Southwest Wisconsin.
This is News from the Setter, WRCE.
107.7 WRCE, news from the center and home for the Todd Allball Show, Monday through Friday from 2 to 4.
For WRCE 107.7 and AM 1450 news, I'm Tim Thied. Concerning neo-Nazi messages in the Baraboo community, Bob Haig reports.
A September 15th Facebook post by Baraboo police referenced small baggies of birdseed which contain information on pieces of paper. WKOW 27 reports the paper carried neo-Nazi messaging and that police captain Ryan Labrosian said there have been instances of various types of propaganda being distributed around the city, and that other law enforcement agencies in Wisconsin have dealt with similar incidents. Police are seeking any camera footage that may lead to a suspect and asking residents to toss the bags in the trash. It's not the first concerning incident in the Sauk County city of 12,000 residents. In 2019, a photo circulated online showing some male high school students giving the Nazi salute brought unwelcome national attention and divided the community. Bob Haig, Wisconsin Radio Network.
Police say someone was attacked outside Camp Randall over the weekend, and it was totally unprovoked. It happened in the parking lot of 15 Breeze Terrace Saturday morning at about 2. UW-Madison police say the victim was taken to the hospital in critical condition. While the attack was unprovoked, police believe it was targeted. Authorities later arrested a 33-year-old man named Keith Jones and even said he may have a best security uniform and radio. Jones was taken to the Dane County Jail on charges of aggravated battery, robbery, and a probation violation. For WRCE 107.7 and AM 1450 News, I'm Tim Thied.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. The Dawson's Creek reunion was missing one of its biggest stars Monday night at a planned event to raise money for cancer. James Vanderbeek was supposed to be part of the read as he was the man of honor. The Varsity Blues star was diagnosed with stage 3 colorectal cancer last November, so Dawson's Creek castmate and friend Michelle Williams put together a table read of the pilot script that included original cast members Katie Holmes and Joshua Jackson. Vanderbeek ended up having to bow out due to stomach pains, but had a pretty heavy hitter as an understudy in Lin-Manuel Miranda of Hamilton fame. If you're a Tom Holland fan, your Spidey senses were probably tingling over the weekend. The actor suffered a concussion on the set of Spider-Man Brand New Day. Variety reports that Holland was injured while filming in Glasgow, Scotland for the film that is set to be released next summer. This is the first time Holland has put on the Spidey suit since 2021's Spider-Man No Way Home. I said the word Spidey way too many times. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
We bring the excitement to you from wherever the Milwaukee Brewers are playing on WRCE FM 107.7 AM 1450 in Richland Center.
Hi, meteorologist Brandon Bormans. Areas of fog through mid to late morning, then expect skies to gradually become mostly sunny. A high temperature near 74. Tonight, partly cloudy skies with lows in the mid-50s. Good-looking day on Wednesday, partly sunny with highs in the lower 70s. It's 58 at our studios.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley. Why throw your hat in the ring to become governor, especially in times like this?
Folks are tired of politicians who focus on culture rules and partisan
partisan issues versus delivering real results is going to change lives. And that's what we've done in Milwaukee County. And so my calling is being able to be there for people at my best when people are dealing with their worst times. And as elected officials, as community leaders, that's what we should be focused on.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show, weekday afternoons from 4 until 6.
When it comes to vaping, the truth can get clouded. So let's make it clear. Vaping is not safe for youth.
Because vaping can put microscopic particles into your lungs.
And dangerous things like metals into your body.
And nicotine, which can harm a person's brain development through their mid-20s.
With appealing flavors, high nicotine levels, and lots of promotion on social media.
Many kids think vaping is harmless, but it's not.
So talk to your kids about the risks of vaping.
Because when you talk, they hear you.
Learn more at underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
Maggie Dawn.
At the top of the show, I'm joined by former U.S. Attorney James Santel as we discuss the Supreme Court's dismantling of all independent agencies. Oh, my goodness. Don't miss it.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
Tomorrow on the program, we will be talking to the State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Jill Underley. She gave the State of Education address at the state capitol late last week, and so we will be talking to her about some of what she had to say about the state of education, and maybe if there was anything that didn't make the final cut, other things that she wanted to say in her remarks under the Capitol Dome. So we'll have her on. We will also have a guest who's an expert in public health policy. Kathy Hempstead is her name. She's a national health policy expert with the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, talking about healthcare tax credits and what they mean for individuals across America, especially now that they're in danger of being slashed by that, you know, big bloated boondoggle that Donald Trump passed. Or maybe they'll get restored because that's what Democrats want, to avoid a government shutdown. Regardless, Kathy Hempstead will talk about that. She and Dr. Jill Underley, state superintendent, tomorrow here on the program. But this morning on the program, we have Dan Schaefer. He's the political editor for Civic Media. He's the founder of the Recombobulation Area, therecombobulationarea.news. Mr. Schaefer, good morning. How are you?
Mr. Kreitlow, good morning to you as well. Always wonderful to join you here on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Where do we want to start here?
Want to start today, Pat?
I want to start with a new package of bills, or maybe it's a single bill by Republicans about elections that essentially wants to swat a fly with a howitzer. The swatting the fly, the very easy thing to do would be to allow for Monday processing of absentee ballot envelopes, not the ballots themselves, but verifying the names, the addresses, the witnesses, all that kind of stuff, so that then you can open them, run them on Tuesday on Election Day. Mm-hmm. That should be just a clean bill, should have been done years ago to get rid of that tired talking point about, you know, late night ballot counting in Milwaukee and other big cities.
It got close last time, too, as a standalone bill. It passed the assembly and hit roadblocks in the Senate. So yes. It did have some inertia to get that done. Unfortunately, didn't get across the finish line.
It did not. And so now to hear Assembly Minority Leader Scott Krug tell it, they've got a bill that'll do this. Oh, but by the way, there are some strings attached. Here come the howitzers. Dan, why did they make this so complicated to add webcams on municipal websites pointed at drop boxes and law enforcement, accompanying any visits to ballot boxes to move ballots? It's almost like they're not serious about wanting to do the easy thing, that they have to throw all these hard things on there, too.
Well, they haven't been able to do the easy thing. That's part of the problem here. And I guess if nothing else, I have to give them credit for, you know, if something fails, try something different. And so they're trying something different. I'm not sure. I want to see some more of the details on what exactly they're proposing for drop boxes, what they're proposing for law enforcement. You know, I think there are so many of these election-related issues on the right that just comes down to telling your voters the truth about these things and telling your voters there is no conspiracy about late-night ballot dumps in Milwaukee. There is no conspiracy about ballot drop boxes. There is no conspiracy about, you know, the chain of... I'm blanking on the word here, but there is no conspiracy and just like the possession of the ballots and all of that. And so much of that since 2020 in particular has just come down to being honest with your voters about this, being honest with your supporters. And, you know, so things don't spiral out of control and we end up with ridiculous Gableman investigations that spend millions of dollars and do nothing. Just like part of it is just you just need to be more honest with your voters about the reality of these things. But you know what? If that's not breaking through, I don't know if I'm going to end up agreeing with all of these measures that Krug and others are proposing here. But I do appreciate they're trying. They're trying to get this absentee ballot thing across the finish line. You know, the GOP has concerns. Again, I don't think they're that legitimate about drop boxes. Maybe there's a simple way to address this to quell some of those concerns. You know, maybe there's a simpler way than what is being proposed here to address some of those concerns, but I do appreciate that they're trying. You know, I appreciate that they're trying to get something done, and I always appreciate lawmakers who are taking a more pragmatic approach than just trying to do and say things to get headlines.
Well, and that's where I appreciate having you on, that you're essentially giving the benefit of the doubt to the Republican authors, saying, you know, let's find a way to get the early processing done, that might also address some people's concerns. And that is definitely a glass half full way of looking. And I completely admit that I'm taking the glass half empty view of it that says we don't want that. We want to continue the conspiracy. So we're going to add on some stuff that also claims, you know, ties into conspiracies, that drop boxes are not trustworthy and things like that. So will something result from this that would pass and that would survive a veto by Governor Evers, or is this all just for show? I guess that's why you play the game, as the coaches like to say. It's why you hold the fall session and you see what comes out.
Yeah, and I think too, you know, I'm waiting to see the full rollout of this. You know, this has passed the assembly. Representative Krug is in the assembly. Are there going to be any Republican state senators who are going to be getting on board with this too? Because that's where things stalled last time. If we're looking at the practicality of the path forward for some of these bills, like the early count bill passed in the assembly. It didn't in the Senate. So are there going to be people in the Senate joining for the rollout of this bill? I think that is an important factor to consider as well.
It really is, because it's something that, you know, those of us who watch or have been in the legislature know very well, but most others do not, is that the difference in caucuses, the Assembly Republicans and the Senate Republicans are frequently not on the same page, maybe not on positions, but on strategy or on specifics. And the same can be said of House Republicans and Senate Republicans in the U.S. Capitol. And by the way, same goes for Democrats. It's just that we're talking about Republicans because they're in control right now. And I don't know how to explain it any other way than to say turf. You know, these are turf battles between two different caucuses of the same party. And we see it a lot in the state capitol, in this case, especially with Assembly Republicans and Senate Republicans.
Yeah, and it's such a good point. There is, you know, this level of disarray, regardless of which legislative body you're looking at. But I think one thing that in among the Republicans here, you know, Robin Voss has been the longest serving assembly speaker in state history, and he has been remarkably effective at getting his caucus to line up behind him on so many issues over the years, this being another one. But in the Senate, I think we're seeing, it has really been much more all over the place, especially lately. Like we had in the budget, you had the assembly minority leader and the Senate president, both Republicans, voting on opposite sides of the budget bill. And I think it was the first time in a really, 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 really long time that that had been the case. And I think that is indicative of some larger tension and disarray that might be the case among Senate Republicans. I think that is where, You know, if you're looking at the outlook here for the next, you know, year plus of governing in Wisconsin, you know, I think the assembly might be able to get some things done Republicans might be able to pass some things in the assembly. But are they going to get anywhere in the Senate when they have the Republicans are very much not on the same page? The Democrats are waiting to flip the Senate and win the majority there in a year from now. I think that, you know, they're already announced a number of very strong candidates that would have the opportunity to do that. You know, I wonder what kind of reaction we're going to see in the Senate.
And by the way, this next point is very inside baseball. I'm going to admit that first and foremost. But if you want to know if the two caucuses from the same party disagree on something at the moment, watch for the sign of one of them passing a bill and then adjourning, gaveling out a session, because that means the other house, the assembly, the Senate, can't amend it and send it back to them because they've already gone home. It's like, nope, this is here to final offer. We're going home. If you ever see that, instead of waiting for each other, working out their disagreements and all that, if you don't see that, there is dissension. It's why you see those headlines, Democrats in disarray or Republicans in disarray. And it's goofy. And again, it's a theme we've hit several times here is we all have to compromise in our day-to-day lives. And yet our politicians have sometimes the toughest time doing it. We're talking to Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area and political editor of Civic Media. Since our last conversation, there's been another candidate coming in for governor. Francesca Hong announced last Wednesday, 2 days after Senator Kelda Royce got in the race. What's your assessment of the gubernatorial field and, you know, whether we're at a static state now or if we may be seeing more changes in the number of candidates in the near future?
Yeah, for one, I think we're gonna continue to see more candidates. I think this is going to be a pretty big field. But just to, you know, we talked a little bit about Roy's announcement when I was on the show last week. So let's talk a little bit about Representative Hong's announcement. So I wrote this too early breakdown of the governor's race that you can read over at the Recombobulation Area. And I kind of had a big four of top contenders, which included Sarah Rodriguez, David Crowley, Kelda Royce, and the one candidate who's one of the candidates rumored to be announcing, but has not yet announced, an Attorney General Josh Call. Not sure what's happening with his political future, but that's a conversation for another time. But I had listed Francesca Hong's potential candidacy on that list, and I characterized her as the wild card because I think that is the type of energy that she's going to bring into this campaign. She actually, I think, has embraced that a little bit. She talked about wanting to be the wild card in a few different interviews during the rollout last week. You know, I one of the things about her and her candidacy that's already evident and is going to continue to be evident is that she's going to be just working really hard. She's announced this statewide tour. She's having events all over the place. She's been super active online. And I think that is just going to put pressure on the rest of the field to up their game a little bit because nobody's going to outwork her. Having restaurant jobs in my past as well, nobody's going to outwork somebody who's had service industry jobs and working in restaurants. So I think she's just going to make everyone else in the field work that much harder. And I think that's ultimately a very good thing.
Yes. And she is the one who, again, when we say wild card, you say, well, what do you mean by that? Well, at some point, these candidates are going to have forums, if not full on debates. And Fran Hong is among those, especially those in the Socialist Caucus, who have come out and said, not just we want to hike in the minimum wage, we want it to be $20 an hour. And now this is just an example, and I'm putting words in her mouth, but she's the kind of candidate who at a forum would hear somebody give an answer, yes, we need a higher minimum wage. And she would just right out say to that fellow Democrat, say it, just say $20. Why won't you say $20 an hour? And you know why they won't? Because they don't want to be pegged down to a specific number. But Fran is the kind of person who'll be like, say it. $20, because otherwise maybe it's just $8 an hour. That's not going to work. And she's the kind of candidate who's going to hold fellow Democrats to the fire.
Yeah, and I also just think it's just almost this the blocking and tackling of a campaign, and she's just going to be out there talking to people and meeting with people and going all over the state, and I think that is going to make everybody else just kind of up their game in these things, and I think that is, that competition's a good thing. Competition brings the best out of us, and I think that is part of why we want to have a primary like this.
Yeah, and that's where I think, again, even though more candidates may be coming, I think even with the ones that are in already, it may not be much longer before we start to see these kinds of forums where they can, again, what was it you like to say, iron sharpens iron.
And that's right.
You get that through just these kinds of things. We're talking to Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation area, and we will have some final news and notes with Dan and more from Lake Wissota coming up next. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Earlier this summer, the Trump Justice Department requested states turn over massive amounts of voter registration, balloting, and election administration records. Two states which refused the request, Maine and Oregon, are now being sued by DOJ. The Brennan Center for Justice counts 34 states which received data requests from either the Civil Rights Division, formerly a watchdog for voting rights, or from DOJ's Criminal Division. New Hampshire cited state statutes prohibiting the release of such information, but Indiana confirmed it recently sent DOJ personal information, including driver's license and partial Social Security numbers. Maine received its first request in mid-July, which it declined August 8th, citing a lack of justification. DOJ's statement announcing the suit said, quote, "American citizens have a right to feel confident in the integrity of our electoral process, and the refusal of certain states to protect their citizens against vote dilution will result in legal consequences," unquote. Vote dilution refers to alleged widespread voting by non-citizens, an already debunked conspiracy theory from the 2020 and 2024 elections. The Trump administration confirmed last week it was sharing the voter data with the Department of Homeland Security. Secretaries of State Shanna Bellows in Maine and Tobias Reid of Oregon have vowed to fight the request in court. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
School sports are played by humans, coached by humans, and officiated by humans. So the next time you're sitting in the stands at a school athletic event, please remember this and maintain your humanity, especially when it comes to judging and critiquing athletes, coaches, and officials. Please show your fellow humans some respect. They'll appreciate your empathy.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Hey there, Wisconsin. Tom Hartman here. Democracy is not a spectator sport, so join me each and every weekday right here on Civic Media for the Tom Hartman program from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Covering the news of the day and sharing ways for you to get off the sidelines and get active in your community, because change starts with you. Get involved and tune in to the Tom Hartman program Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. right here on your local Civic Media radio station.
Where working people come to talk. It's the Rick Smith Show, weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join me for an honest approach to the issues American working families care about. No talking points, no focus groups. Get ready for a heavy dose of democracy, fairness, grit, and no apologies. It's current affairs from a working class labor perspective. Facts are center, science is real, and everyone gets a seat at the table. The Rick Smith Show, weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Tomorrow on the program, we will have State Superintendent Jill Underley, also Kathy Hempstead from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, on healthcare tax credits that Republicans in Congress and Donald Trump want to cut. They are at the center of the debate over a potential federal government shutdown. So all that and more tomorrow, but we're continuing things today here with Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation area, Civic Media political editor, and also a guy who's doing a lot of stuff with a newsletter. And that would include Civic Media's new daily newsletter, Civic Media Today, on the one and only Substack.com. This is a project that's kept you busy, young man.
Sure has. Sure has. We've kept a lot of us busy. We've been putting a lot into this brand new newsletter. It's Civic Media Today. We're really excited about it. And it is just going to be a really terrific way for people to connect with all things across the Civic Media extended universe. There is, links to live streams, Spotify podcasts, links to all of the news that we have from all over the state, led by our news director, Shally Pittman. And I think this is, for those of you who may only listen to, Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, or may only know one other show on the network or something like that, this is a great way to engage with the huge amount of content that we produce every day across the Civic Media Network. And it's, I think it's going to be a really, and we have a little bit of fresh news to start things off each day with this newsletter. And I think it's just going to be a great one-stop shop to connect with everything, all things Civic Media.
And I say this as somebody who, we've got an Up North News daily newsletter. We've got a weekly newsletter. I've got so many other newsletters that I like to look at. But I mean this very sincerely. This is one of the best designed, best put together newsletters of all the ones that I get in terms of links to the shows, links to stories that you're working on. Obviously, we'd love if people subscribe to all these shows as podcasts as well. But if you're not and you still want to see what seem to be some pretty important clips, you got to go see this. It's civicmediatoday.substack.com. Again, civicmediatoday.substack.com. Being put together by Dan Schaefer and a cast of thousands all across Civic Media land. There, among the stories you'd see there and others places would be more campaign announcements, not just for governor, but also for seats in the state assembly and the state senate. It was a busy one last week. Corrine Hendrickson announcing on our show here that she was running in the 17th Senate district, making her the third Democrat seeking to unseat Howard Markline, the co-chair of the Joint Finance Committee. But we are definitely in campaign announcement season this time of year, aren't we, Dan?
We sure are, and those have really been ramping up in recent weeks, and a couple big ones in here in the southeastern Wisconsin area over the past few days. So last week, Democrat Trevor Young announced that he would be running for state senate in District 21. Young is currently works for the city of Racine, and he previously served as an alderman in there in his hometown as well. Trevor is a young guy, so this would be a big shift in that representation in that district. The guy who is currently the incumbent there, State Senator Van Wangard, who has been there in quite a long time. And this is as close to a 50-50 district as there is going to be in the state Senate map next year. Last year in the election, this Kamala Harris won this by 1 point, Tammy Baldwin by 2 points. Currently represented by a Republican incumbent, Van Wangard, who is also about the same age as Tony Evers. So we don't know if he's going to be running for another 4-year term there as well. So certainly one of and this is one of the top pickup opportunities, potential pickup opportunities for Democrats on the state Senate map next year. There are three districts won by Kamala Harris last fall that are currently represented by Republicans that have not seen elections under new maps. So this is one of those three. And I think this is really going to be one to watch. I'm really interested to see if Wangard will run again.
And I would be the first to note that his predecessor, Democrat John Lehman, I served with him in the state Senate in that area, obviously not the exact same district with the new maps, but it would not be unprecedented to have a Democrat serving in that Senate district again for the first time in several years now. From a state Democratic Party standpoint, there's a new what are we going to call this? Well, they call it the Governor's Readiness Project. What is it that they're doing to help prepare the candidate field for 2026?
Yeah, so the Democratic Party of Wisconsin made this announcement yesterday that seems pretty interesting. It's called the Governor Readiness Project, and I think this is basically recognizing that there is going to be a big field in the campaign for governor, and that without wanting to put their thumb on the scale for any particular candidate throughout the primary, this is mainly the main focus here is to get whoever the Democratic nominee is ready for the general election in November 2026. And I think part of this is because Wisconsin's partisan primary is in August, so it doesn't give people that much time to run in the general election. You know, I do think a long-term thing we should think about is moving that partisan primary to the April spring election to just to give candidates a little bit more time to run in the general. But perhaps that's a conversation for another time. But it's interesting to see the Democratic Party of Wisconsin be especially proactive about this. And Tony Evers is getting involved. A number of, you know, kind of top officials from the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, including Chair Devin Remiker, are getting involved. And I'm going to be interested to see how this plays out in practice. But I think being this proactive about it is just really smart planning.
It is, because there's going to be a wealth of primaries in all of these legislative districts, in some congressional districts. And the worst thing that the Democratic Party, and I'm sure Republicans as well, have done at the state and county level is just sit on their hands and wait until there's a nominee and do virtually no preparation, no messaging or anything. So, like, for example, the Eau Claire County Party could do a lot to help facilitate the three Democrats running in the third district and not just sit there. So if the state party is showing that level of interest, activity, messaging, and preparation, that is a net positive for them. Read more from Dan Schaefer at therecombobulationarea.news and certainly through civic media. Dan, thank you. It's always good to connect. Have a great day.
Thanks, Pat. Be well.
All right. Thanks to all of you as well for being part of our mornings powered by Up North News. Enjoy your Tuesday. See you back here bright and early, 6 a.m. tomorrow here up north.
This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Ahead of President Trump's address to the United Nations General Assembly, Secretary of State Marco Rubio on ABC's Good Morning America defended the U.S. position in the world despite the decision earlier this year to close USAID.
People have died because gangs steal the aid. People have died because the distributors of aid have not done well. People have died because other countries haven't stepped up. But the United States has saved more lives and continues to save more lives than any other country in the world. And we're going to continue to do it, but we're going to do it the right way and in a responsible way.
The Secret Service has thwarted a plot that could have devastated cellular communications in and around New York City. No arrests have been made, but a source familiar with the investigation tells ABC it's suspected to be the work of a group with links to China. Shares of the company that makes Tylenol have recovered ahead of the opening bell on Wall Street after President Trump said pregnant women should not take Tylenol because of autism risks. Medical groups say studies have not found a causal link. This is ABC News.